Page 94, the Private Eye Podcast.
Hello and welcome to Page 94. My name is Andrew Hunter-Murray and this is a very different kind of episode from the usual one. This is going to be a US election special on fake news. This election, a staggering number of people have been reading about and even more worryingly, believing a conspiracy theory called QAnon, which in a nutshell alleges that there is a ring of devil-worshipping paedophiles running the US government, business, and pretty much everything else. It grew in part out of a very similar conspiracy theory which took root during the last election. This was the so-called Pizzagate conspiracy theory, which alleged that a particular pizza restaurant in downtown Washington called Comet Ping Pong was host to a ring of paedophile politicians who were using the restaurant to abduct, abuse, and sell children. Now, years after it first started, Pizzagate has re-emerged as one of the main pillars of QAnon, and despite being very obviously untrue, it has had serious real consequences offline too. Earlier this year, as part of a TV documentary about fake news, The Eye's editor Ian Hislop went to America to Comet Ping Pong to interview the owner, a man called James Alefantis. As a supporter of the Democrats, before the last election, Alefantis had exchanged some emails with John Podesta, one of Hillary Clinton's senior aides, about the idea of cooking for some fundraisers. But when Podesta's emails were leaked online, conspiracy theorists started drawing much darker conclusions about their correspondence. Only a small portion of Ian's original interview with Mr. Alefantis actually aired on the original documentary, so for this edition of Page 94, we are giving you the whole thing. First of all, I spoke briefly to Ian about what he found when he went to Washington to the restaurant. Here's Ian.
The experience was very surreal. I'd read a great deal about Pizzagate. I'd read some of the stuff online. I'd read accounts of it. I'd read debunking of it, which never seems to do much good. And then suddenly there I was in a, you know, suburban bit of Washington in a perfectly ordinary pizza joint with a perfectly delightful man whose life had been completely ruined by this online lunacy. And not just his life, you know, the lives of his staff and all the people around him. This was last year. And, you know, the original big Pizzagate spike of lunacy was 2016. And 2020, it's back. Pizzagate's been wrapped up in QAnon. You know, another lunatic conspiracy about coronavirus and satanic paedophile communities. And they've incorporated one previous fake narrative into a new one. And one of the reasons I wanted to put this interview out is that in this resurgence of the QAnon conspiracy, which is wrapped up with lots of other hashtags, you suddenly see ordinary people carrying banners saying, "Save the children." Which children? Oh, the children in the basement. You're mad. These children are not at risk because they're imaginary. And I just thought, listen to this bloke. You know, he is real.
Okay, well, with that, let's now go over to Ian again, in Washington this time, speaking to James Alefantis. Here he is.
Around the end of October, I got a call from this guy at the Washington City paper, who's a reporter, on my cell phone, and he said, "Do you know that there's this whole conspiracy theory involving Comet Ping Pong, your restaurant, and Hillary Clinton and human trafficking?" And I was like, "No, I don't know anything about that." And he said, "Well, there's this big thing, whole thing on Reddit." And I said, I don't know what you're talking about, so no. I don't really have any comment. And then I called my young managers here and was like, "Do we know? What is this thing?" And they went online and saw that there was this whole other communication world going on these chat rooms about centering on Comet Ping Pong.
It's difficult to exaggerate just how mad this is. So you find out that you are online being described as running an enormous paedophile ring. Here,
yes,
and it's all in the basement. I mean, how did they get there?
For some reason, people would think that Comet Ping Pong, which is a family-friendly restaurant that's been here for 12 years, the center of a place where Hillary Clinton and these political people were either kidnapping the children and selling them in order to retain their immense wealth, or sacrificing them in ritualistic sacrifices in order to retain their political power, or sexually abusing them. So each
and
one.
And this was based, as far as I can see, on the fact that Comet Ping Pong and has the initial CP, which is the same as child pornography. I mean, this is the level of the evidence, isn't it?
That's one. It seems that any string of evidence can be made into something, and any time anything is refuted, if there's anything that we refute or anyone refutes anything, then that fact is just blown over and created and used as just part of the conspiracy.
Again, when I try and look at what the evidence was, it seems to be that, well, you're gay, pizza is Italian, and you had some modern art on the wall, and you've got some godchildren and their pictures of them somewhere.
Yes.
Is that it? Am I overstating the level of this?
I think it could be even simplified even more to the fact that basically I emailed with John Podesta about potentially or guest chefing a fundraiser for Hillary Clinton or yeah. Obama years ago. Yeah. So it was basically the fact that me, as a pizzeria owner in the yeah. neighborhood, had
and
communicated
you know,
with these people.
Yeah.
And they decided that since there were children in the restaurant at the pizza place, that that must be some kind of lure or something. It's hard to explain.
But this built and built and built, and then you read that your name, which is, you know, James Alephantis, is a bit like J'aime les enfants, which is French, obviously, yes. and suspicious.
It's very strange. I'm not sure if that any of it logically makes any sense no. there, because my name has nothing to do with that, and
no.
there's theories that maybe I changed my name to what it is from that, or that is my real name or something, and it's a hard one.
They went as far as to actually say, well, a cheese pizza is obviously a girl, or a sausage is a boy. I mean, it was just extraordinary the level to which they had absolutely decided that you had a code for everything.
Yeah, there's apparently, according to them, which I've never seen evidence of, some kind of FBI code that human traffickers use to communicate with themselves. And they claim online that cheese pizza means one thing and ice cream means something else.
Right.
And so it's implied that we're guilty because we're talking about cheese pizza a lot
yeah.
here at the pizzeria.
That would implicate all pizza outfits in the entire United States,
yes,
presumably.
I think so.
But when these things are refuted or it becomes absolutely ridiculous, there was a big thing about this place was operating with a basement where everything happened. And you pointed out there's not a basement.
Yes, we
Did
don't
anyone,
have a basement.
Well, I've had a good look. I can't find one, but you may be hiding it.
Yeah, I've seen over the time that there was... I gave an interview years ago saying that we would store our sauce in the basement. And actually, I do have another restaurant, and that restaurant does have a basement.
Right.
So we do store our sauce and other things in that basement.
Of another restaurant.
Of another restaurant. Any evidence that's refuted or tried to be refuted, it doesn't matter. They claim there are tunnels leading from this to the White House, and that Obama's traveling here to Comet in secret tunnels from the White House. And there's a complex series of tunnels under Washington, D.C. So through this experience, I've seen the most outlandish and outrageous things, including my change of name and secret tunnels, and et cetera.
And when you read this stuff, what do you feel? I mean, do you think this is unfair? This is crazy? What on earth is going on?
It's a hard one because as time has passed, although I still get lots of threatening messages and the conspiracy theory continues very strongly online and in reality. But originally what it was I had never experienced anything like this before. And I think in some ways there hadn't been a lot of precedent for it.
No.
So I had no idea what to think.
Yeah.
And neither did anyone else that we asked.
When these stories first appear, your first instinct is, oh, I'll ignore them or I'll rebut them. Can you do that?
I've learned a lot about this, and I had to basically teach myself with any advice I could find. But if you imagine, as you know, images of my friends and family's children start to propagate throughout the internet as some kind of evidence, false evidence of something. And of course we're in complete shock. And then my name with a target on it or you know, kill this faggot or whatever thing is all out there. So we start figuring out how do we take this down or what do we do?
Yeah.
And I'm getting calls from people's friends whose kids have just been to Comet, and they're appearing online. And I suddenly have to give them advice. So we start learning that there's this thing called a DMC takedown, that you can fill out a form online, and you can claim ownership of a copyrighted image, and then it's reviewed, and then they may take it down or not. But this has to be filed for every single image, and every time this appears, and the filing form, really, you can look this up, has your personal email and your address that you send to the offender. They review it, they get a chance to respond to the platform, and then the platform makes a decision. So obviously, with the volume of images, there was really nothing we could do. But it took a while to figure out there was nothing to do, because your first instinct is like to protect everyone,
yeah,
particularly your own family members who are being victimized.
Who've had their pictures stolen from Instagram and then shoved up as though they were trafficked.
Yeah. And that's one of the most hateful things that happened, is these self-appointed online investigators claiming they're helping the world or children are actually turning really innocent children into victims, where their image online or their names or whatever is found out is spilled out as some kind of evidence that will also never go away.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't a victimless crime. I mean, it is absolutely a criminal offence against all those people. So there's thousands, you can't fill out thousands of forms. You don't want to fill out a form that gives all your details to the people who are going to attack you again.
Right.
What,
and then here
you
we
do
also
then?
Had a, we have a business, so online, the strategy was our Yelp page or our Facebook business page started being flooded with negative reviews, or like just insane reviews or disgusting things being said online. And some of those still appear. So as a small business, you would imagine you're under this attack. My staff starts trying to flag them or report these reviews. And in many cases, the platform say they don't violate their community standards or whatever, and they remain up to this day.
And why do you think people believe this?
I think there's a lot of things. One is that people want to make sense of the world, maybe, and they feel disempowered or disenfranchised from their lives. I've had conversations with people online or experiences where I've realized that a lot of people in America don't feel like they have power or control over their lives. So a crazy conspiracy theory that makes you believe or hate or feel something, or if you feel that the government is oppressing you and you can't find a job or you can't make work for yourself, those are difficult situations to be in. And sometimes I think it becomes confused and people try to glob on to something they feel like they can control or they can take an action about.
Can I just say that's a very generous response from someone who's been the target of this stuff?
Well,
I mean,
there's the online, you can kind of deflect it. Early in the beginning, we thought, this is just an online something.
Yeah.
And we would go to our lives every day here and make pizza, and people would come and eat. And until it broke through out of this online computer screen and into the real world, we were basically okay.
Yeah.
Although the attacks were so powerful and strong and in such volume that it was affecting us. People started calling the restaurant, and people were protesting or coming with cameras and trying to look around during service. So our fear increased. And our need for security increased, and we reported to the police. I called the FBI really after I got a very terrifying death threat one day. And I thought, you know, I really just have to try to do every single thing I can right. So I called the FBI, and I remember thinking, this is absurd that I'm reporting this, but I had to say, explain to the person who answered the phone at the FBI, you know, this is what's happening.
Yeah.
You know, I've helped a presidential candidate, I had a fundraiser, and the chairman has his thing stolen, and now we're under this, and this is what we're accused of. And they sort of seemed like they had heard about it or something, and they were like, okay, thank you very much for your call, goodbye. And so that was it.
Mm-hmm.
I got to a point of being afraid. I mean, we were really afraid of people walking in the door, in a way.
Can you tell us this extraordinary event when the virtual world came into the real world, your world?
It was December 4th, and it was a sunny day like today on a Sunday afternoon. and there were the restaurant was filled with families and people eating. So we were on this under this sort of online attack, and people had been aware, so there was sort of an extra busyness. But we're a pretty busy restaurant as it is, so there are people playing ping pong and eating lunch. And I was not here. I had a young manager woman running the show for that afternoon, and she's there, and all of a sudden from the front door this guy walks in with a loaded AR-15 assault rifle and walks straight through this small crowded restaurant, walks toward the back of the building and goes into our party room where we have kids' birthday parties and things. And at that point, my brave staff, who was on high alert, immediately called the police and went table to table asking the customers to leave the building because there was a man with a gun.
Right, and he'd walked through, headed over there. Did people panic? Were they terrified?
There wasn't a panic. My staff was really calm and cool for some reason. They all stayed. They called the police immediately. And then they, as I said, went table to table asking people to leave. And the customers were sort of like, oh, we're okay. We're going to finish our pizzas kind of thing. And they're like, no, you really have to leave.
Yeah.
And at that point, people did start to get up and leave the building quickly. And it all was, we quickly evacuated the whole building. But there was kids playing ping pong. Mm. There was people eating. And
what did he say?
Nothing. He said nothing. He was carrying an assault rifle and seemed to be like on a mission or investigating, looking around. So he went straight toward the back, looked through the building. My salad cook is a young guy who grew up in South Central Los Angeles, and he recognized the gun and a gunman and very strangely but nicely followed this gunman to the back of the building. And then proceeded to evacuate the kids playing ping pong and the families playing ping pong from that room. And that salad cook stayed in the building while everyone was evacuated. And this gunman was coming toward the kitchen, and this cook bravely looked around, made sure the building was empty and evacuated, closed the door, and walked out the front.
And then what did the gunman do?
At which point, there was a few minutes, the police were surrounding the building. And what apparently he did was went toward our side entrance there. There's one locked space inside this big warehousey building, and that's a little closet where we have our computer system for the point of sale, and also our staff puts their bags or jackets for the service.
And it was locked, and he thought, this is it. I've discovered the secret.
I think it was the one place he couldn't see, which is just this closet, which is actually open at the top. So he pointed his rifle at the door to shoot the lock off. When he went to do that, one of my salad cooks was coming in from the side, who was unaware of what was going on from the side entrance, and this gunman pointed the assault rifle at young cook, and the cook was, of course, terrified, dropped all of his provisions and ran away into the parking lot. And at that point, this gunman shot at the locked door. The bullet went through the door and hit our computer system. And at that point, I believe he laid down his weapons in this hall and walked back through the empty building into the middle of Connecticut Avenue and surrendered to the police in this middle of Connecticut Avenue.
It strikes me as incredibly ironic that he should have shot the computer, which of all the things in the building was the reason that he was there.
Yeah.
And the call went out from InfoWars, why don't you go and investigate this yourselves? And then this man turns up.
And that was this gunman had watched that video in the days leading up. It's in the record. There are real life harms that come from these things. So someone online trying to play games and have fun and feel something is one thing. But the fact is that this is a dangerous game to play with. People exist in reality, and people get hurt from these things. Luckily, no one here was killed. But as the judge said in this case, many people could have. And this gunman is lucky to be alive. And there have been other cases where people have been killed. So we do live in a dangerous time, and I don't want my world to have to feel that danger all the time. And that's part of the reason why we are positive, where we believe in the power of our community to keep us safe. Mm. And we feel safe here.
People like Alex Jones on InfoWars, has he apologized? Has he recanted?
Alex Jones has made apologies. None of them are early enough. Yeah. None of them were right. And also, they were all seemed to be under some form of duress for him. It's just a little too little and way too late.
Yeah. And did any of the other platforms apologize to you or say we shouldn't have put this up? 4chan, Reddit, all the places where this grew?
It's a good question. No, they haven't. They never would.
Because they don't care? I mean,
it's not in their business model. I mean, the fact is, another thing I've learned is that these people are trying to, this is their model. The more hatred and viscerosity and vitriol that shows up on these platforms, the more people are engaged and the more revenue they receive. So they have no interest or motivation in trying to stop a worldwide conspiracy theory or, frankly, to protect young people working in a public yep. place.
And do you think the original people who did this, did it just maliciously? Was it political or was it just wickedness?
It's a good question, too. I think that...
You are a Democrat. You were offering to make money for Democrats. You were a friend with someone who had a position as a Democrat.
Yes. Yeah, I know lots of people. And everyone comes here. So Democrats, Republicans, everyone. And I think... I hope someday that I'll understand what happened. But I think it's a complex answer from what I know.
Yeah.
I do think that these emails were stolen, that they were released, that they became the subject, that I became dragged into this political conspiracy. I think that people were trying to make a mess of the election early on. And then from there, I think it spiraled out. Because the fact is that when you accuse someone of the heinous crimes yeah. that I've been accused of, it's the worst thing you can call someone. And if someone feels like their children are in danger or there's a group of people threatening their children, you're guaranteed to get a response from that person.
Yes.
So,
but in the real world, families with children turned up, even the next day, you're still full, you're still a family restaurant.
Yes.
It's the idea of children, it's the fear, isn't it? Ooh, paedophilia. Oh, we're all completely terrified.
It is.
And that becomes a weapon.
It's true. It's weaponized social media. And what it is, in a way, is the people that come here, who've been bringing their families here for 12 years, they talk like you and I do over the table. And we have pizza, yeah. we break bread, and we say, I heard this crazy thing. And then someone would say to you across the table, oh, that's not real. And this person you would know, and you would say, okay, that's not real. And then you'd move on with your lives.
Yeah.
But online, it appears there's this echo chamber where someone says something isn't real, and the other person says, you're right, let's figure it out.
Yeah.
And then there's a pile on, and it spins out of control.
Yeah.
So one of the values that we have here, and one of the original reasons I opened this restaurant, was for people to come together. In a restaurant, you come together in a physical place, and you have a conversation, or you play ping pong, and you talk about things, and you're able to get advice or learn.
This is a restaurant in Washington, and at one point, someone in the White House, whose son was up for a job in the White House, retweeted it, saying, well, it's probably true until I see some evidence otherwise. Can you tell me how that was?
That's one of the saddest experiences, because it was that day on December 4th, a gunman comes to my restaurant, a full restaurant filled with families and children, with a loaded AR-15 assault rifle, fires it in the restaurant, and is arrested in the Connecticut Avenue. And Michael Flynn Jr. tweets out that same day, hours later,
unbelievable,
that Pizzagate is real until proven false, or something exactly around those lines.
And this it was is a man just who's like being considered for a job in the White House.
It was I was personally shocked by it. I was in chaos. I remember being shocked, and then I remember days later being shocked again when I recalled it or heard about it.
So his father is up for the job of national security advisor. The national security advisor and his son believe this cloud of total garbage online. How safe does that make anyone feel?
It's a very strange thing. In the case of those two, It was really shocking and strange. If you look up my name now in any platform, it's disgusting when it appears. If you look up the name of the restaurant, it's pretty bad too.
Yeah.
And there's lots of things, videos and YouTube and Instagram and everything is filled with just lies and also just sort of disgusting images.
Do you think we'll get to a point where it'll be forgotten that we'll have worked out how to deal with this?
I don't see it progressing in that direction very quickly. There seems to be nothing you can do to clean up the internet. And there's tons of laws that protect you from not doing that, and not enough that do. And the fact is that a lot of these things exist beyond the law. Like, these platforms can take down whatever they want. Like, there's no pornography on YouTube. So you go to YouTube, and they have a way of searching and cleaning up YouTube.
Yeah.
So there's no way that you can't search and clean up the images stolen from my personal accounts of innocent children?
Yeah.
Somehow I think that is possible.
Well, when an advertiser complains, they manage to pull it down very quickly, don't they?
True.
So, I mean, do you think the platforms, which are the equivalent of publishers, that would be our argument, do you think there should be more onus on them?
I mean, this is not my area of expertise, of course.
No, no.
I mostly like to make
pizza.
You
know more about it than anything else.
But I've had a lot of experience in it, yeah. They have no journalistic standards, and they're trying to drive people to go to the sites. So if something is sexy or appealing or applies to an emotional hatred that gets someone to go on their site, that's beneficial to the business model. It's not my business model, but it is theirs.
It's the exact opposite of yours, isn't it?
Exactly.
Come here and have a good time. They want you to come here and feel miserable and angry.
Yes. You can't respond to this. There's no appropriate response. If someone calls you the worst thing in the world, you say, I'm not that thing. It's obviously evidence that you are that thing.
Yeah.
So there was no response to be had. And the fact is no matter what I said, you know, come in, there's no basement, which I did. It didn't matter. Or the fact is that when this gunman came to the restaurant, searched through by himself, opened the one locked space in the place, surrendered in the middle of Connecticut Avenue. The very next day, online, they claimed that this gunman's a false flag and that Hillary Clinton or I had hired him to distract from our heinous crimes. So it's a matter of no matter what extreme we would go to, it's not disprovable because the truth isn't what it's about. The truth doesn't matter.
And it's that failure to care about the truth that leaves you vulnerable. And that, in a sense, was your victory, that it's still going. They didn't shut you down. The place is still what it was.
There are moments where I do feel proud of that. It's hard because it's so absurd that it's something that you should never have to fight against. So I'm not sure if I did ever do the right thing. But it is true, and I feel reassured, that my original mission of starting this restaurant to create a place which would create happy memories for families, to have a place where when you look back you think that was a great place that I would go on Friday night with my dad and he'd have a beer and we'd play ping pong and hang out, is all still there. So that happens every Friday where people come here and eat and hang out still. And it's some hard work on me, but as I said, it was the power of intelligent people in the world who are able to tell the difference between an obvious manufactured lie and journalism and reality.
James Alefantis there. Thanks to him and to Ian Hislop. That interview was originally featured in a truncated form in the documentary Ian Hislop's Fake News, A True History. That was produced by Wingspan and directed by Peter Sweezy, and with any luck, it'll be on again soon. That's it for this episode of Page 94. We hope you've enjoyed listening to it. If you have, then one of the best ways you can express your thanks is to take out a very reasonably priced subscription to the magazine. It'll be delivered to your door every fortnight, full of jokes, cartoons, and cutting-edge journalism. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back again with another one before too long. Goodbye.